thinking home. And I keep hearing that all the time, guys says, well, you know, those fish winter down there and then they come up here in the summer. No, they don't, they come up here when they come up here.
Yeah.
When they're juvenile.
Yeah.
That's happened. So now somebody's squirreling.
And then they said yesterday that a couple of people have been really nice, you know, my dad had come down in 2 years, we had got them.
Down there.
I wonder which way they're coming.
Oh, yeah.
They're coming north. Rogue fish kill cars down the north, right? You know, this famous Salmon Alley here, I've always thought that those were probably rogue fish. Just kind of pooping along the shoreline going north.
Yeah, Salmon Alley.
Okay. I know when I, remember when I fished with Greg Ruhl, we were still alive and we.
All right, Richard.
Hey, don't be in a brush.
Start whenever you want.
Need another handcuff.
Okay, call the meeting order, this is a regular commission meeting of the Port of Brooklyn Harbor Commission, Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. And we'll now do the pledge of allegiance.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Danielle, roll call please.
Larry.
Here.
Ken.
Here.
Sharon.
Here.
Joe.
Here.
Richard.
Here. Anybody have any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
No.
Any potential conflicts with interest?
No.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Aye, second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. That brings us to item three, the election of commission officer. This is for a one-year term of office from July 1st, 2020 to June 3rd, 2022 to June 30th of 2023. Is that right? You got the dates right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So, entertain nominations for president.
I would like to nominate Richard.
I second it to see what the same.
Okay.
I just seem, leave it all the same, so.
Well, why don't we just go on down and then do a nomination for vice president and secretary treasurer, and we'll vote on it all at once.
Okay.
Vice president.
I'll nominate Joe for vice president.
Fine.
Second.
Okay. Secretary treasurer.
Sharon. Like, I nominate Sharon.
Thank you.
Second.
Any further nominations? If not, we'll close the nomination. And we'll vote on that slate of officers, which is Richard D. President, Jill Spear, Vice President, Sharon Hartung, Secretary Treasurer. Daniel.
Larry.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. That brings us to approval of meeting minutes.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of the budget hearing meeting Wednesday, June 15, 2022, and the minutes of the regular commission meeting Wednesday, June 15, 2022.
Second.
No.
Oh, and one more. I back up. I did see something like that somewhere. Where is it?
The special meeting was missed here. Give me it.
I make a motion to approve the minutes of the budget and regular meeting Wednesday, June 15, 2022, and special meeting Tuesday, June 21st, 2022.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion on that? All right, hearing none, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Okay, that brings us to public comments. We have four public comments. beginning with an email public comment from June McGraw regarding the leash law sign.
What?
She's not available. Would you like for me to read that?
Sure.
Hello, Danielle. My name is June McGraw. I'm a resident of Brookings, Oregon. I've spoken with you and April in the past at the port office concerning dogs not on a leash and how some of the dogs have been aggressive with my dog and how the owners do not have their dogs on a leash or under their control. I have their commitments. I have other commitments this Wednesday, and I'm not able to attend the Wednesday port meeting to share my experiences with staff and the commissioners that my dog and I have experienced at the port in the last 5 months. I was hoping that you could read my email at the Wednesday port meeting and forward it. There are no signs posted anywhere at the port informing people there is a leash law, nor are there any signs about picking up pet waste. I have contacted Curry County Code Enforcement and the Curry County Sheriff's Department concerning the last dog incident on Monday, July 11th at approximately 10:15 a.m. where two dogs charged at me and my dog and attacked my dog, who was deaf. I yelled at the owner, who was standing next to his van and his friend's Suburban where they were parked next to the kite field, where they let the dogs out to play without a leash or being under the control of any other owners in any way. Two of the large shepherd mixed dogs charged across the parking lot, growling, barking, and then both large dogs jumped on my dog. There were several witnesses, three older women, who saw the attack happen. The witnesses yelled at the owner and his friends that were in. There is a leash law and to get them on a leash. I yelled at the owner to get his dog off mine and to get on a leash right now. The owner told me to be quiet and that his dog did not attack my dog. The owner of the dog and his friends also yelled many obscurities and at the witnesses, as well as me. He did get his dogs to come back to him and he put them in his van, but he never once put them on a leash or grabbed hold of them and pulled them off my dog. My dog and I are not physically injured at this time. It gave us both quite a scare. I called the sheriff's department and made a complaint after I got back to my car. One of the witnesses also called the police while the incident was happening. I have vehicle plates and information on the two vehicles if you would like it. I walk my dog at the port 3 to 4 days a week. I've seen both the vehicles and both males back at the port this past week several times with their dogs at the kite field and not one of them on a leash. They like to park at the port bathrooms at the kite field or near the jetty at the end of the RV park. The other owners and their dogs that I have encountered previously were not this aggressive. However, they did not take responsibility for their dogs and did not have a leash or put them on a leash at any time. The other owners appear to be local residents who told me to mind my own business, that there are no signs about a leash law, and that their dog doesn't attack, whatever that means. I informed the owner that there is a leash law, and I would appreciate it if she would put her dog on a leash, even if she doesn't attack. The incidences have happened on the sidewalks of the RV park and on the sidewalks at the boat basins. I believe most people want to comply with the rules and laws. They just need visual reminders of what is expected of them and what consequences will be if they do not comply. I believe when signs are posted, it helps port, code enforcement officers, and the sheriff's department job a bit easier. I know everyone is short-staffed these days, so if there's any way I can help to get the signs posted, let me know. I have attached a few samples of the signs to this email. If you would like, please let me know. Thank you for your time and attention on this ongoing safety issue for dogs and people. If you have any questions or concerns, please contact me. Thank you.
John Williams, Fort Knox, Boat Space and Security.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address the commissioners and port staff. My name is Don Williams. I recently had my boat stolen from the marina. Last Wednesday night, my boat was taken at some point in time. I'm not really sure of all the timelines. It was taken from the marina ran down with the ocean, ran back up to the boat launch. The guy went up to Zola's, apparently came back down, and then he took it and went up the river with it. I came down about 9 o'clock in the morning, and the boat was gone. Called around. I called the port and asked them if they moved it. Nobody had seen it. Nobody saw it there that morning. I called Andy Martin. I sent him pictures. He posted it on Facebook that it was stolen. And we've got a great community here, people that really care. And it didn't take too long, about an hour and a half, before word got back that somebody had seen it up the river. It was pine dry, 3-4 feet up out of the water, tied up to the abutment right below 101 Bridge there. Went up there, met the sheriff up there. I called April. She had Danielle was working hard. I appreciate that, to try and identify what was going on, where it went, when, how it went. But I believe there was insufficient evidence to really get an idea, because the lighting at the camera station there at the gate was wasn't good enough to really identify anybody. But Lieutenant Inslee got up there. He did some research. He looked at the Zola's camera. They had, and he was able to identify the suspect. So anyway, I got the boat back, which was an absolute relief. It's pretty devastating to go down there to do something to your boat and it's absolutely gone. I've had annual mortgage down there for going on 10 years now, and that's the last thing. I mean, I guess you always expect maybe it could be sunk, but he wouldn't expect it to be gone. So anyway, I was able to get the boat back, and it was scratched up and a little worse wear. Nothing was stolen. Everything was locked inside, and we were able to, I was able to get it back up and get it home and do some work on it. So, but a couple things I wanted to address, I guess, was, well, I went down the night before last, about 10 to 11, and the gate going down to the sport boat basin was still unlocked. And I took a couple of pictures, and it's dark, and they don't turn out too good. And then a security guy came down there, and he was getting ready to lock it up. So I had a brief conversation with him, and I'm not sure what the contract is with the security people, but my understanding with him was that they had 2 one-hour sessions that they'd come around at night, I guess, wanting to maybe lock it up and inspect some stuff and then come back later on. But that was one of the issues that I wanted to discuss. The other one was the lighting. You know, I worked for PG&E for 40 years, and one of the biggest things I always stress is you got to have good lighting. Without lighting, the cameras can't see. If the cameras can't see, you can't see. So it's really important, I think, to, you know, there's some really good lighting off the port maintenance building, but if they put lighting like that down on those gate areas, those cameras could visualize what's going on and be able to see something. You know, a lot of stuff happens at night, and the lighting is at the boat launch area. They got great cameras, but if they can't see, then you guys can't see. So that makes it pretty tough. And I think if there's any way that they can take a look, I mean, there's $1 million-plus worth of down at the sport basin, and I don't know how many millions of dollars worth of boats down at the other basin, but, you know, if they're going to hire a security guard, if you could come down and go through the gate and lock it and walk the docks, it would take 20 minutes with a flashlight to walk those docks. And then apparently the guy that stole my boat had come in about 8 minutes before he locked the gate that night. I don't know how long he was there before he actually took the boat. The other thing is he may have got locked in, and I don't think there's an egress button on that gate, and I don't know if he couldn't get out, and he stole the boat to get back up toward the homeless camps. I really don't know. I don't particularly want to talk to him because that conversation won't end well. But I don't know if there's a requirement for an egress button, but if people have an emergency or something happens later on after the gate's locked, they can't get out of that gate. So that might be something that needs to be looked at. And then, of course, the lighting is critically important, I think, so that they can see that stuff. I'm extremely happy to get the boat back, and I appreciate everybody's help in making all that happen. And I just think that there's a couple things that maybe could be looked at that would enhance the security of the people down there. A lot of people are pretty concerned that if this could happen, it could happen again. This incident, it happened to be a transient that was down there, and I have seen some people down on the docks who put in boats and different things, and I think the security, if a guy went by with a flashlight once in a while, it'd really be a good deterrent, and then have some lights down there would really help. So I appreciate your time. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for your comments, Tom. Gary Hartman.
Hi, I'm Gary Hartman. You guys all know me. If you go down to the boat shop, he's got two humongous anchors alongside the one alongside the gate, and the other one by the his door where he goes into his office. It's a real trip hazard. And what I would suggest is you go to these other ports and you see these anchors painted up and they got the port's name on them and stuff like that. As far as I know, those anchors belong to the port. I don't know why we can't have them out here and use them in these rocks, at least as some kind of beautification or something. And you can paint, there's enough room on them, you can paint Port of Brooklyn Harbor on the thing. But I think they ought to be moved from where they are right now, because somebody's going to trip over that one going into his office, and seeing how they belong to the port, you know what's going to happen. That's it.
Okay. Thanks, Gary. Al Cornell, EPA testing.
Yeah, I was just curious. I wanted to ask the management around here, the EPA testing of the water, and it's been making any progress, or what's going on with that?
No answer?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not a question answer period.
No.
Overall, it's going well, and we keep implementing measures to make it better.
I mean, is the pollution getting less and less, or is it stagnant, or did it get worse?
It's pretty much stagnant. Find ourselves failing the same things over and over and over again.
Okay.
So,
is there any plan to bring it in the right direction?
FEMA projects.
Well, we're under a Tier 2 correction action. So we talked about it in previous meetings, so you can find all that online if you want to listen to our meetings about our test resort, our test, Tier 2, Tier 1. We talk about it every time we have a report come out.
Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to ask Mr. Williams a question.
Go ahead.
Sir, what size is your boat?
Pardon me?
What size is your boat?
21 foot. It's a Willie Raptor open boat.
And did you have the key in it, or was
no? No, the key was not in it, but the he operated the kicker motor.
Okay.
And there's a lot of kicker motors down there on those boats that are. I have no idea how many boats he may have got into or whatever, but whether they're manual kicker motors or whatever. But he had the wherewithal to be able to get that started. Now mine was an electric. And I had the switch on. I usually leave it on because of the bilge, the second bilge pump. And I just didn't think it would be an issue. And he powered it down and took off with it. So that will not happen again. It will be locked up. That power will be locked off of there, so it can't happen. But it's just a travesty that they've got a dang thing that's stolen. So
thank you.
I'd be the best.
Okay. That brings us to the manager report, June 2022 Safety, Security, and Environmental Report.
So for the month of June, port staff discussed the OSHA's new rules for high ambient temperatures, the port's health heat illness prevention plan, why high heat is a risk, and what practices must be in place at certain temperatures. We had eight incidences happen for the month of June, bringing the year total to 55. There was a blue and white Ford that drove through the kite field grass and tore up the grass doing donuts. The Curry County Sheriffs were notified. One of our
tenants, the South Coast Tours, had their security cables cut and a kayak stolen. Security cameras were not able to identify the individual, but the kayak was found up the Chetco River by another boater, and he received the kayak back. Four ACES Security and the port has recorded 240 security issues for the month of June, bringing the year total to 721. Monthly inspections were completed for our stormwater pollution control plan. There was an oil sheen in Basin 2. We investigated it, but were not able to pinpoint the cause. National Response Center and Oregon Response or Emergency Response System was notified. Upcoming events, Bigfoot Blues Festival is July 23rd on the boardwalk. Art on the Coast Festival is August 6th through the 7th on the boardwalk. And the Pirates of the Pacific Festival is August 11th through the 14th on the boardwalk. That's all I have.
Thank you. Harbor Master report.
Okay. RV park, tidewater construction cleared and rocked the area by the public fishing fair and dry camping. This new space will be for RV park guests, extra trailers. This will be keep the parking lots free of unhitched trailers. Port purchased 6 new picnic tables for the day use area. Occupancy was 45% for the month of June. For the marina, chain link fence was replaced along the boatyard and Lower Harbor Road. The fence was rotted at the bottom, and during high winds, it leaned over and broke. Staff added more tanks at the boatyard rinse station to allow more settling time to let heavy solids fall out before entering the treatment system. Removing brush and overgrowth on the banks will be a summer-long project. Boat launches, there's 475 boat launches in the month of June. Telehandler jobs was 4. Travel lift haul outs was 6. Commercial receiving dock. Pacific Seafood has fixed their hoist and is now back operating on their leased area. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Aquino, was here to dredge the federal channel. They requested that the camel be installed at the south and the south hoist be removed to avoid any damages. It's the Bornstein hoist on the steel wall. Now that they have came and gone, the camel has been removed and the hoist reinstalled. And the port also repaired the last Bornstein hoist area. Commercial retail building, Bell & Whistle reported that their air conditioner was not working. Frank's Heating and Air was able to come out and get it working again. There's no more replacements for that style. So in the future, we'll need to put different, more modern equipment in. Maintenance completed 68 work orders throughout the port. Mowing and weeding were done weekly. Prep work for the 4th of July included meetings with the 4th of July committee led by Henry, manager Fred Myers. These meetings were so we could go over the plan for fallout zones and areas that needed to be managed. Staff also cleaned up fuel storage area, removing old pallets, ropes, and debris. We also completed the 1,000-hour maintenance on the telehandler and the travel lift annual inspection who reports to OSHA was scheduled for July 18th, and he was here, and all those were passed. So that's what I got.
Do you have any feeling why the visitation was down at the RV park?
I don't know.
Fuel prices, maybe?
Probably a good guess, yeah. I'm not exactly sure why it was a little bit lower than normal, but it didn't seem like it. 45% did. It didn't seem, I was kind of shocked to see the numbers. Felt like there was more people over there, but.
Okay. Financial summary and manager report.
All right. I just want to make another note that we are on a downward trend because you look at March on the occupancy, it's down 10%, 4% next month. So it's kind of, could be fuel pricing that's preventing those numbers going down. But anyways, financial report for June, our end of the month unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $381,420. Restricted cash and equivalents totaled $918,254, with total checking savings at $1,299,674. The June profit and loss, total revenue from all funds, $356,625. Total expenses, $471,580,000. Total net income for June, negative $114,955. Some of the reasons why we're negative $114,000, we did pay $88,000 in debt payments. Out of that $88,77,500 is our quarterly payment to Business Oregon. We did buy a lot of fuel that month, $168,199 that month in fuel. And we only sold $123,000. So there's a $40,000 difference just on the fuel pricing.
It's 62.
Unusual expenses for the month, Edwards Roofing did repair the commercial basin restroom roof. It's $7,800. Travis mentioned Tidewater did some grading for us at the RV park. 5R did some repairs at the RV park, a broken water line. They filled and graded some potholes along the RV park road. And we did rent a piece of equipment from them, and they did the auger holes for the new fence at the boatyard. And Gallman did do some repairs to the pedestals and buying some materials to hook up the boat wash system at the boatyard. The fiscal year and the profits, our general fund program revenue was 104%, which is 4% above budget, which is good for the income. The expenses for the general fund expenditure was actually below budget, so 2.6% of savings. Overall income was below budget because the FEMA project didn't happen and it's been delayed. And same with expenses. We didn't spend any money on FEMA either. I did look at our financial or our fiscal year 2021-22 revenue centers. I put a little graph there, which is kind of interesting on the fuel purchases. I put down how much we bought this last year, and the average was $3.54 a gallon. The previous year was $2.06 a gallon. So fuel pricing obviously went up, as we know. Manager report. We continue working with FEMA on getting our final budget approval. The ball is actually in our court. Jack is working on looking at their numbers. They're revising our dredging numbers about half of what we originally submitted. So Jack's looking at those numbers to compare and see how they come up with their numbers, and we're going to have a response by later this week. Either accept their numbers or counter offer.
Is that what they'll do or have done? I don't follow.
They always look at our numbers, and if they're assuming things, so Jack wants to see what they're assuming. If their numbers are somewhat accurate, then we'll probably accept their lower quantities. It shouldn't affect the dollar amount with inflation and everything, so budget-wise, it might be the same anyways, but just be less cubic yards for your needs on the basin. Under the FEMA disaster. Port items. Travis and I did attend a Southern Oregon Coast Port tabletop exercise, Cascadia Rising. This is a Southern County emergency management teams and Coast Guard station senior officers all met looking at tsunami planning and recovering from a big tsunami disaster. Curry County Management is working on a response recovery plan for all natural emergencies, and it's basically a plan to require funding for materials and equipment for those recoveries. And they'll station those things out and around Tower County. So kind of a detailed plan that they're working on. Oregon Department of Environmental Quality did contact us. They wanted to do a site inspection for a 1200Z permit. This covered 3 years of reporting and testing. We submitted roughly 1,000 pages of documents for their review. They did the on-site inspection, and we met last week for a closeout meeting, and they gave us a no violations. They said a couple of suggestions to update some drainage lines that we didn't have in our drawings. It's just a suggestion, not a violation or anything. So she said we did good on our paperwork. So
remind me what the 1200Z permit is. Is that the stormwater runoff from that?
Yes. Yep.
So how do we continue to fail the inspections that we do if we pass this with 100%?
So is our paperwork all in order? Like what we're submitting and how we're doing it?
It has nothing to do with what the pollution.
The pollution that there is, we are failing our test, but the process that we're doing is the required process and being done right. That's why they give us tier two. We submit plans and we implement those fixes, and they're basically watching to make sure that those plans get implemented, and we continue testing and improving on our quality until we meet our goals.
Which we should when we get the bid.
It should help. Yeah. It should definitely put us in a lot better position than we are now.
Okay, the EPA Region 10 Community Grants Team, that's the team that's going to give us the money or provide us the money for the wastewater treatment plant. They did contact me by email to begin working on you know, stuff prior to the award, and I listed the items. We do have 1 through 4 pretty much done. Well, actually, they are done except for identifying cost sharing funding. Part of that is we have to find out exactly what the cost of the plant is going to be so we can figure out what the matching is going to be. And number 5, the environmental information. Luckily, we got Jack that's done this stuff before, and he is going to be looking at that so we can have that all ready to go when they give us all the paperwork for the application for the money. And it's still a couple months down the road before we see all that. And also, I got Jack on the line to give the board update with the wastewater treatment plant design.
Okay, go ahead, Jack.
Oh, hello.
Let me turn them up.
I'm out in the East Coast. I'm just, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, as you all know, our initial presentation and discussion. Uh-oh. Something happened.
We can hear you.
I've been hearing you just great just now. It's just okay. Well, what happens is that when you're talking, it sounds like there's a parrot up about 100 feet above me talking. Okay, anyway, I'll continue anyway, but forgive me if somebody says something and I don't respond to it because I can't hear what they're saying all of a sudden. Okay, so the initial presentation. Okay, the initial presentation and that we originally showed everybody at the commissioners for. I'm not sure if somebody's talking to me or.
You're the only one talking, Jack.
Whatever you did, oh, there you go. Okay, now I can hear you. Now I, okay, I'm getting a lot of static from somebody.
Nobody's talking, Jack.
Okay, I'll just keep talking as if no one's talking to me. Okay, the initial presentation that we discussed initially on this system. You know, was primarily to ID to identify the parameters that we have to be dealing with and some units that are, you know, up to date that can treat each one of these issues that we have to encounter. And this was all done previous to it, data analysis and the volumes, the flow rate and consistency of flow rate and all those kinds of unknowns. And additionally, during this time, we had not received any serious amount of discussion with the DEQ. Additionally, during the previous commissioners' meetings, we received input from the commissioners themselves and the public. So what followed was immediately was that we went through revision of processes with focus on some of the concerns that were expressed. For example, the reducing of the footprint, utilizing pretreatment to reduce the volume, to try to deal with the type of technology that can handle the very wide variety that we have come to find, variation, if you will, of the flow rates that come in from day to day during the seasons, shrimp and crab, particularly shrimp. And dealing with the DEQ, because what we have really here is because of the expressed interest that the port has to be able to have a kind of a permit where it's not restricted to one particular fish processing plant or company, but it is owned by the port. The DEQ turns out not a lot of new permits are actually issued per year at the DEQ. They're usually revisions of existing permits. And so we basically find ourselves falling between two stools, if you will, somewhere between the POTW type of individual permit, which we really don't want, and the 900J permit, which I would very much like, but we really can't. They're not going to allow. So we're presently nailing down the DEQ and forcing them to determine what type of permit that we really are supposed to apply for. The application itself is not really that particularly rigorous. It's just a matter of making sure that we are all on the same page. And so that's going on with the DEQ as well. As far as design of systems, we're presently, and it's been very successful for us so far, to be able to, we're considering, and it looks like it's pretty much a go so far, is reducing this 500,000 gallon a day system treatment of a lot of the wastewater down to as little as 10% of that with some good and contemporary designs. So that's what we're hoping for, and that would really, really be nice. It solves all our problems. Plus, we're being warned by Amy Wentworth and others about the DEQ's plans on expanding these fish processing permits to include the treatment of metals. They're concerned about metals that come in from sea life. And everybody that's argued that we're just putting back what we took in has lost. So it's this type of system we're looking at, by coincidence, also engages with that future concern. So we're pretty happy so far with our design, preliminary design moving forward. I'm now in dialogue with the systems people that we've selected, and when we're ready, we'll be able to, before we apply for the permit, we'll be discussing the system with you, that is put forth drawings and discuss the system and what we're talking about, and we can get more in detail then.
Thank you, Jack.
That's about it.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions on any of the reports?
You bet. Thank you.
You have a question on this.
Go ahead.
What's the difference between an EPA Region 10 community grant and the DeFazio grant if it's all dealing with the wastewater treatment plant?
I can answer that. The EPA is the vehicle by which we're going to get that.
Yeah, I understand that.
So we now have to engage with EPA and follow their guidelines in order to get the money. So Region 10 community grants applies only to us?
No.
It, okay, how much is it? Or well, how much is the maximum? Or
I'll let you answer that because you've talked about
it. What do you mean, how much? The fund?
Yeah, how much, are, how much is identify cost sharing funding?
Yeah, we don't know until we find out from Jack's estimate of what his plant's going to cost.
So,
but we have up to $3.5 million from DeFazio, which 20% of that would be matching.
Right.
But until Jack nails down the design and his cost estimate, it could be a lot less than $3.5 million. And then the 20% of that, whatever that number is, would be our matching.
Okay.
And there's an opportunity to actually have that matching waived. And until they have this application in front of me, you know, I'm going to look at that option as well. But I'm sure you got to meet all kinds of criteria about waiving the matching. But they did mention that before, which I think I mentioned to you guys before that, about waiving it.
So just to clarify, at this point, there is $3.5 million, federal dollars, in an EPA fund somewhere that's intended to come to us. So we're now in the process of finishing the engineering design, which once we select a design, then the cost will be applied based on that design. And we notify EPA then that this is what it's going to cost, up to $3.5 million. And they'll determine whether or not we have to come up with match.
I think it's, yeah, us and them, depending on what their waiver requirements are.
Okay.
But I'm sure that application is going to say how much money are you wanting to apply for, but we got up to $3.5 million from DeFazio.
And all of this is still hanging on the type of permit we need to get from DEQ to determine what the plant has to do. All right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So.
And what are the options on the type of permit?
Well, it sounds like there were two.
There were two, but two of them really are difficult for them to work, so there's not many situations that apply to a situation we're putting this treatment plant in, so they're going to have to look at their different permits and see if one actually will apply or if they're going to be kind of creating a branch or some a different criteria that...
Or be creative.
Or yeah, we're kind of in a unique
situation. I should clarify something about this. I should clarify that the type of permit we get will not affect the design of the system.
Okay.
The design of the system is meant to satisfy federal and state requirements for wastewater, coming out of the end of pipe, and that's not going to change. Just what they require, how they require it, whether they, and I won't go into the details unless you want me to, but it's really not going to change the system itself.
Okay, thanks for that. All right, so bottom line is it sounds like we are closing in on the design and waiting for whatever kind of action
yes.
we have with the government.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I have a question. Go ahead. So, Gary, on the matching funds with a lot of our other government funds that we've received, can it be also as either dollars or work hours?
I don't know how their matching is going to apply. I'll have to see their application and see what they will. If matching in kind would work, it could. I know I've seen that happen before. This port's done that before.
Right.
Is there a possibility that the amount of money we're spending on design and research could be part of the match?
Probably not, because they say any money spent before the award is not covered in the earmark or in the
money. I'm talking about what we're doing right now.
Right. The pie won't be covered.
Okay. All right.
I have a question. Gary, did I understand you there's a chance to waive our matching, and if that does happen, are we technically zero funds out of our pockets?
If they waive it, that's correct.
If they waive it,
yes.
It would cost us literally nothing.
That's correct, if they waive it. Might as a big if.
But it's out there.
Wow. Sometimes I feel like we're catching butterflies here, but anyway, I'm trying to, I think we kind of know where we are, so at this point. Okay, any other questions or comments for any of the management reports? I need a motion to approve.
I make a motion to approve the safety, security, environmental report, the harbor master report, fiscal, and financial and management report of June 2022, as discussed.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. I'm pointing at you because you always remind me I forget to do that. So. Okay, that brings us to action items. Action item A is the boatyard building plan. That's the boatyard building plan.
Yeah. Structure, yes. All right, so the last meeting, the board had some questions about looking at cost estimates for like a turnkey, like a completed structure and structures, because at last meeting I did have multiple buildings. So Travis and I did try to get more quotes, which we did get some more quotes, but what we found out was when we're talking to contractors and suppliers, without engineer drawings to go by, it's kind of hard to get reliable quotes. So we just realized after trying to get better numbers to bring to the board is we need drawings. We need completed drawings. We need like a design. Do we want one big building? Do we want multiple buildings? Kind of, we need the criteria to go to get these quotes. And it was kind of hard just pulling out of the air and trying to get quotes and people assuming things. Prices that we did get were very high. So I'm kind of asking the board to slow down. Let's figure out what kind of building we want and get an engineer, get somebody to build or develop the drawings, and then go get the pricing from there.
That seems logical to me for a couple of reasons. If we have engineer drawings that we can then apply to a contractor or building supply place, then he can see exactly what we're going to do. Also, if we have pre-engineered drawings and we signal our intent to do this, I think there is a possibility, and I don't know this for sure, that we may be able to apply for some grant funding or economic development, and then we would have all that we need to get the grant by saying, yes, this is exactly what we want to do, and here's what it's going to cost. So I think the idea of having a prepared package that says this is it would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, there is also grants out there, federal grants, state grants, that will provide design for it too as well. They'll pay up to 75%. Of course, they'll have to pay up to 25% of the design. So if we wanted to apply for a grant for the design work, we could do that. It supposed to take more time to do that, but we could save money that way. And then, like you're saying, we could take this design and go apply for other grants, federal grants, where we could pay 25% of the entire building. So, or there's other options where you can go to the state itself and ask for a bill where you get funding from the state, like from the lottery, connect Oregon funds or whatever else. That just takes more time, more effort to try to get money from the legislators. It's possible. I've seen it done. We actually got $600,000 for our, upgrading the dock work and the transit dock and work dock that we set a couple years ago, a year ago.
So at this point, what you need from us is to settle on what we would like in general terms of the building?
I think that's the first goal is, and I'm almost looking at the entire boatyard. Travis and I have been talking, the travel lift ramp is getting outdated, it's deteriorating on us. We've mentioned this before, it's an R2's business plan to get rebuilt. So that travel lift ramp could be part of like a boatyard upgrade. And at the same time, we could be including hangers to do boat repair work, which will help our stormwater issue. So
we could theoretically make a series of projects, starting with the building itself, and then adding on that the potential of rebuilding the travel lift dock, and then adding on to that the potential of upgrading the boatyard to better accommodate the needs of the commercial fleet.
Yep.
Or anybody.
Right.
So if we start now with the building itself and figure out kind of what we think it ought to look like, and then let you go to work on that, and you can come back. You've already got any ideas about the rest of it?
Well, it would be nice if they get whatever engineer to do it all at one time.
Okay.
You know, if we decide to go after a grant, we can get the grant to pay 75% of it. We can get all the engineering completely done, get everything that we want engineered, and then we can put it out separately for grants, or one big grant, or one big ask from a legislator. So, I mean, there's multiple ways of doing it, but the first thing to do is we should find out exactly what we want to do, and then get our engineer drawings. So we have a plan to go forward. So it's kind of.
So I have a comment, Mr. Whatever.
Okay, go ahead.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, sure.
I haven't been following this close enough, but what, with this new building, what are, or who is going to be using that building? What is it going to be for? What's the primary reason?
Well, they'll replace this building that we have down here now where the boat shop is.
Yes.
And build a rental because that's falling down.
Okay.
So the idea would be to design some sort of structure to replace that, which would include, it could include two large bays like for shop spaces and possibly some smaller areas for storage or whatever else.
So for the boatyard maintenance?
Well, no, I mean, may have commercial fishermen wants to rent one of those smaller spaces to store equipment in, or recreational guy may want to put his boat in there. I don't know. But
okay.
I mean, the point is there will be identified spaces down there available for rent.
For not just for the boatyard.
No.
No, it would be
right now.
Leasable area for
okay.
anyone that was interested in leasing.
Okay. Thank you.
I mean, it's something that's lacking in this community is a large covered retail space that you can rent. That's not a shop or a store, but anyway.
There's two options here listed. I think a third option is any building can be remodeled, and I would like to spend the money for an engineer to evaluate the structure that we have as to what it would take to bring it in line with, it can be aesthetically, you know, structurally, we need to establish that first. As far as the cosmetics of the exterior, we know we need a new roof, but I am very much against going out and creating more debt with another loan and taking money that we are currently collecting from that building and applying it to a different, another loan instead of putting it in the general fund where we are currently using it. So I think there's a third option of just hiring a structural engineer to come back and tell us what we need to do on that building.
We have that report, don't we?
Yeah, Jack gave us a report and gave us his recommendation. The board already approved going for a new building.
He did not tell us what needed to be done to bring that building in line structurally. He told us what you wanted to hear as far as condemning it. There's two different things.
I thought I remembered he had a report from a structural engineer.
He did, but it didn't tell us what needed to be done to bring that building up to current standards.
So I guess what it sounds is that, A, number one, the decision affects even the route we want to go. We got to make that decision now. We can't. We got to make a decision if we're going to, either way, we're looking at spending money. We're going to spend money on a new building, or we're going to spend money, you know, having somebody give us a more in-depth look at what is down there. But if that's something we want to hear, well, we got to get that straightened out right now and see if we're going to fix that building and which direction we're going to go.
Good idea.
Was that ever looked at as an option? I mean, Jack said condemn it, I guess, but did we ever think about restoring it? Was that ever a thought process that we went through? Is it restorable? Did we ever?
Jack laid it out in his report.
Well, Jack's not a structural engineer.
He had a
friend do it. Yeah, who never came down physically and looked in there.
I think it was a friend.
Well, associate that he knows. But I'm just saying, I'm asking the question. The guy that condemned it technically never stepped foot in there.
Well, at this point, the building we know is reaching an age where you would have to dump money into it to bring it back up. And we have been discussing this as, let's go with something new that we can take off from that will secure that boatyard for the next 50, 60 years down the road versus putting money into what's currently over there, which is knocking it down basically to the concrete. And go back up.
Well, what I remember Jack telling us is, okay, so if you're going to go in there and redo this building, then you're going to have to bring it up to code. You're going to have it analyzed for wind shear and all the stuff that was never done on that original building. So basically you're going to end up building a new building in the place where that one currently sits. That's what I recall the discussion being. But
all the electrical for that entire building comes out of Kenny's shop at one spot. If you look up, the electrical alone is, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars in electrical.
Well, that's
your guess.
I've been doing this long enough to know about how much we're looking at. All of that and to bring in new services to each building and provide them with the electrical that they need. We have a pretty good idea of just what RV parks cost, just for wire and to put that in, which is in the hundreds of thousands.
Well, what I recall was the one that struck me the most.
Well, guys, can I interject a few things?
Please.
Can I clarify a few things? Okay. First of all, it is true that I am not a structural engineer as defined by people that's all they do. However, I am qualified to do certain structural work and analysis. However, in the case of this building, I did not want this to be entirely my opinion. I didn't do anything that I thought somebody wanted me to do. This person, this other engineer, that you're right, they did not come on the site. They did do they were at the time busy and we were wanting some quick answers. That person is not an associate of any kind. I have never worked with him on any project in any other location or at the court ever. So I wanted to make that clear. My recommendations were not to demolish the building. My recommendations were that if you wish to maintain the building, you're going to have to, in the interim, when we make a further structural analysis, if that's called for, that you really have to make sure you're covering, you know, the port as far as the safety infractions that are out there. It's a dangerous building. The thing is, somebody said, I heard them say that wind load was not really initially designed into the building, because that is correct, but they used extremely large structural members, okay, which made it so that they really didn't have to do wind load calculations. The problem is that those very powerful structural members, thick, big pieces of timber and so on, and reinforced trusses with plywood, they're failing at key stress points. And so it is true. Now, you know, I have a structural engineer that I'm working on a project right now in Coos Bay who does that, all right? And they could come in, but it would cost, and it's my opinion, Now, I have been wrong, okay, but it's my opinion that what we'll find is that the two problems is that, number one, you will spend probably a good deal of money trying to restore it, and also you're going to have to remove some materials and redo some construction errors that were made just in order to satisfy code. Number two is that you will not have the utility that probably spending very close, but I can't say for sure, but probably spending the same amount of money, you will get much more utility in newer, more spacious buildings. You have a lot of exits, walls, interior walls, rot, that invitations to rot that have to be resolved in the existing building. The whole thing, in all the work that I've done, I've been in engineering, doing engineering work since 1986. I would say the ideas that are being brought forth as far as it's time to do it. Now, you're all over my pay grade when you talk about the loans that you need to take out. So the commissioner may be well correct in saying that maybe we need to spend extra money to do a real cost analysis on what it would take to restore that building. And that might be a valid point. So I can't comment because not. I mean, I don't look at the finances of the Port of Brookings Harbor. That's not something I'm supposed to do. But I just want you to understand a couple of things that I've just said about this.
Thank you, Jack.
I have a question for Jack.
Go ahead.
Hey, you bet.
Jack, do you have any guesstimate what it would cost to have a structural engineer give us an estimate on what it would cost to restore that building?
Well, let's see. His travel time, and so on, and how much rigor he would have to spend on the beam analysis is my big question. But it may be, I have a feeling that it's going to be a fairly simple thing for this person. And I would bring somebody in, by the way, that I have never worked on a project. And I'm working with this person, and the reason I would recommend him is because I'm impressed with what he's been able to solve, okay? I have a feeling, he's pretty good at on the draw, if you will, okay, if you understand what I mean. That's a lot to do with the cost. Some engineers are not so secure about what they're seeing, and that's naturally when you're not secure about it, what you have to do is you have to do calculations, measurements, on-site stress testing, and all kinds of things. And that's where the cost starts coming in. And they want a full engineering study. I try to avoid those if I can, unless they're really necessary. But there are general, housing recommendations, like if you have 50% of this much degrading going on and these structural members, you can assume that it's going to cost you up to 95% to repair than it is to replace, and then if you add other contingencies, this is the kind of thinking that was always in my mind. I did not want to prescribe that you need to demolish the building. I just wanted to make you aware of the myriads of challenges there are to keeping this building. But a further analysis by an engineer, I'm going to have to probably say it's going to be somewhere in the area of $3,000 to $5,000 if we're lucky.
Hey, Jack, if I have any more on that, because this engineer is going to have to figure out the cost of electrical, so you need electrical background.
Yeah, I'm only talking about the structural. The electrical is a whole other bag. And really, this is not really the work. The electrical is not really the work of an electrical engineer. That's nearly not really who you would bring in on that. But not a structural either.
Well, what we're looking at here is what it's going to cost us to basically build that. Bring that building up to code.
Right. So you need an electrical engineer.
No. We need a structural engineer first. You're going to have the same.
Not an electrical engineer, but a qualified code qualified code-oriented electrician.
Sure.
That's going to cost probably just as much as the engineer.
The general contractors, they fix it all,
right.
All of it, and figure out how much that costs. I mean,
it
we
all
can
comes
chase down,
down
and try and find out what engineer will work. Just call a general contractor and say if anybody's even interested in looking at it and going to option. I mean, that's the other part, too, is you can go out there and find it, but you also got to find somebody to do it, which I don't know. I'm just trying to throw out.
I can talk more in more detail, if you wish, about... You know, about the, some of the things that we found on that building that need to be replaced and things like that, but I don't know if that's really, this is really the time for that.
Probably not right now.
Yeah, it sounds like we're at the point of trying to make a decision here as to what to do to go forward.
Well, the main thing that I see is the new building, evidently, from I had a conversation with you, Gary, that it probably will be more than the $1.2 million. To put that in. We have other numerous projects that we're coming up to that we're going to need funds for. The RV park is probably going to run over the funds that we have, right?
Shouldn't.
Don't think, well, with the costs going up and everything?
No, the
okay.
Cost. We've already,
hopefully
we've
not.
Already got,
but
already
I just don't want to see us get in a lot of.
So there is
issues.
The option that we could say and just do nothing.
Well, and the,
continue
and
to monitor it and do absolutely nothing. Leave it the way it is and continue
yeah.
to monitor it weekly and just re-come back at this in a year or if something drastic happens in between then and drop the whole thing right now and just move on.
Well,
you know?
We need to be able to have a facility over there that they're going to be able to afford as well, to be able to pay for itself.
And that's kind of my concern, too, is just the climate of the things that are going on in the world today, getting supplies, getting contractors. It seems like every time we come in here, we're taking on another loan, and that scares me personally. That's where I'm coming from. I don't know.
I agree with those two. And Travis. And we should just leave it be for now and
we should go ahead.
Just leave it at status quo and
have
a status. Get a few projects done and then go from there.
Can I ask a question? The money generated out of a construction thing like that, will that justify the money that can create, in other words, the business coming out of that structure versus the money you're putting into that structure?
I'm not sure I understand.
Talking
well,
about
how much money is that
return on
going to
investment.
Generate?
Yeah.
What?
Return on investment.
Return on investment. So if we spend $8,000 or $10,000 to get an application, that's going to be recoverable in the long run. So I think you. But it sounds to me like we're at the point now where we're discussing what can, in fact, be done with that existing building, if anything.
Might consider, have, you know, like we said, stopping right now and chasing a grant for designing a boatyard. Like you said, it's going to take us longer, but I think we know we need a building, but we know we can't afford to do everything that we need to do right now. So the only other option we have is maybe seek a grant that's going to pay for 75% of it, which might, you know, over the next year, we can work on that and see what's available, what we can get, and then rediscuss this when, if and when we do have it.
So then,
or get grant.
Would you need to have the engineering drawings to be able to do
that?
That
money would, if we did win with the grant, and that's what they did, then
okay.
We would just use that money and start that process now.
Sounds reasonable. In order to do that, we've got to select a building. We've got to decide what it is we want. Okay, and we're not past the point of fixing the one we have.
Or are we?
So I'll make a motion, Richard, and bring this to a head, if you'd like.
Go ahead.
I'll make a motion that we hire a structural engineer to look at our existing building and give us a cost, rough cost of what it would cost to structurally make it a viable building.
And
that meets code.
Okay.
And electric.
We'll do that if we know the building is structurally sound.
Structural. I think to meet code, you want everything.
All right.
You need electrical, plumbing,
Do the whole nine yards.
So as I understand it, restate your motion. You're making a motion that we hire an engineering firm who is qualified as a structural engineer to give us an evaluation of what it would cost to repair that building to make it, to bring it up to code, both structurally and, you know,
aesthetically.
Well, the other stuff. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. That's the motion.
I'll second it.
Okay. So we have a motion by Ken, second by Larry, and I'll restate it again as best I can. We're contemplating here hiring a structural engineer to evaluate the existing building and give us a cost estimate of what it would cost to repair the structure and bring it up to code. Right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Danielle?
Larry?
Yeah.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
I'm more in favor of the grant.
Joe?
Yes, no.
Yeah, Sharon?
No.
No. Joe?
No.
Richard?
Yes.
So is this supposed to the board know? Help I get quotes and then bring the quotes back to the board for approval, because it's going to be over my dollar
right.
amount. I'm almost sure it's going to be over $10,000 to get it.
Sure.
So the board can approve or not approve whatever contract comes to the board.
Okay. All right.
So in the interim, we'll continue to monitor the building?
Yeah, yep. Right now we're still monitoring it weekly. We got a little form that we've been filling out that, I mean, you're kind of just waiting to see something more major happen. I mean, everything else is kind of, yeah, we know it's rotted. We know things are in bad shape, but we're really trying to log as if anything gets worse.
Travis, you just stood there and said we could wait a year on anything before we did.
I'm still monitoring it.
That's fine, but you were satisfied that it's nothing's going to happen to it within a year, that it was safe to occupy.
I'm not quite sure where you're getting at.
That's not what I understood it to say.
Okay, all right. Don't worry about it.
Well, there's some structural beams that are in the boat shop that are.
Oh, no, they absolutely are. We are fully aware. That's how we got our original report. You know, from them, and guys not even having to come out here to look at it, that told us we might want to look at a new building. But
well,
the building's still standing. It could be standing in a year. It might blow over in 6 months. I don't know. But we're going to continue to monitor it and see what, if any, changes happen until we work through the process that we're working through to give us some better answers.
And I do appreciate the fact that you put this together as well, which looks at the debt and the stuff that's involved with that.
Richard,
have a comment?
I have a question. So you guys are talking about the boat shop, we're getting that, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You guys know it's structurally unsound? And you guys have it occupied?
Have you declared structurally unsound?
That's what I'm asking you. Oh. I'm asking you guys. Do you guys have
a... We have gotten opinions about where the building stands and where we should proceed after that. There's nothing that says everybody has to get out now.
I was just asking.
We have not got any indication that it should be condemned, which is why we're monitoring it at the moment. And that's kind of where we're headed now, I think, with this latest design idea of having a structural engineer look at it. If he tells us it has to be condemned, then that changes a lot of things. We'll have to basically use it.
Guys, I want you to...
Go ahead, Jack.
Guys, I would like you to also refer... Can I say something? I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
You're talking, keep going.
Go ahead, Jack.
There are a set of recommendations in that report, and it does, number four does recommend that you conduct a structural assessment and construct a structural repair plan. So there is no indication in the report that the thing is being condemned, because we don't have enough information to do that. So there is the commissioner's original recommendation it won't hurt. The reason why we haven't pressed on this is because it was kind of to my understanding, we're going to move forward and upgrade the utility of this kind of a building. But it is in there as a recommendation under the report that was submitted to you guys on the 5th of May.
Okay. Well, we're going to proceed with that, Jack, with the evaluation, definitive evaluation. Okay. Moving on to action item B, Zoll's on the Water Lease Amendment Number 2.
And this amendment number 2 covers the concrete patio that he installed on Port property without the board's approval, and also the area in front of that where he has a storage unit and kind of a parking area that he uses exclusively for himself. So that's what this amendment number 2 is.
You've discussed this with him?
He won't return my phone call, my email, or my text messages. So, okay. If the board approves it, I'll send them the approval and see what happens after that.
And this is obviously our attorney prepared this and looked at it.
Yes, he reviewed it and approved it.
Okay. All right.
Do you feel he's not, you say he won't return it, won't speak to you in any way. Is he not operating in good faith, or is he avoiding you?
Maybe he's busy and has returned my calls or text messages. I don't know. I can't wait forever.
Okay.
Do you know that the extension of premises is basically what he's doing is outside dining, and he would be serving alcohol out there? If he signs the lease, he then agrees to all terms of the lease, and by being the property owner and business owner, he has to make sure that that outside dining area meets whatever county standards there are for serving alcohol and consuming alcohol outside of his building. That then becomes his responsibility, not ours.
Okay. The license is issued in his name.
Right.
So it's up to him.
Once he accepts that land is his, right now that land is ours.
Well, it's our land. It's always our land.
But I mean, he leaves. Right. But when he takes responsibility for it, he takes responsibility for the alcohol too. It takes it away from us.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So all we're doing here is just rectifying the fact that he's occupying space he's not paying for, so
correct.
We're going to charge him for the space he's occupying.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
How much more is his rent going up monthly?
It's roughly $230. It's like 2,300 square feet, 10 cents a square foot.
All right. Somebody care to make a motion?
I make a motion to approve Zola on the Water Commercial Lease Amendment Number 2.
I'll second. We have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Okay, that brings us to information item A, 240 pages worth of information item A.
So basically, this is going to be our board-to-board meeting about our storm drain issues that are coming out of the port. They want, the county wants to talk about this master plan, but so we just need to figure out a time, a date and a time when both boards can meet here, and we can talk about their master plan and talk about our issues with our stormwater coming into our basin. Debris, sediment coming to their basins.
Okay.
So I know the roadmaster is going on vacation for several weeks, August 23rd and beyond. So do you want to have a meeting between now and before August 23rd? I'd give them some windows, the dates when we're available, so if they can avoid their meetings. I know Wednesdays is not good for them.
My personal opinion is that this meeting ought to happen as soon as we can get it scheduled.
Yep.
Because this is a discussion that needs to be changed.
The only thing I would suggest is we have enough time to put it in the newspaper.
Yep.
And to get it in the newspaper, we got to have it a week before Friday. So it's going to take me a little bit of time to schedule whatever time frames is good for us and good for them. So it could be like 2 weeks down the road if we, at the earliest. But if they don't get back with me, you know, the week notice to get in the newspaper could make it a week longer. So
the meeting would be in Gold Beach, correct?
Here.
So you're talking almost 2 weeks. We're looking
is
at.
There? I mean, this is what they gave us.
Correct.
It's entire Curry County for the port. Is there a way to skew this meeting so we kind of identify?
I think so. That's why I identified on page 290 or 270. That's where they start talking about the port. So you can kind of skip through a lot of that.
Yes, I think the intent by the roadmaster is to get this ironed out as far as the port's concerned.
Right.
But he's acutely aware that we're not happy about being the recipient of stuff that keeps rolling off of the Harbor Hills, and we're the bottom line. So I'd be curious to hear what county commissioners have to say, and what I think that's
yes. I just don't want to talk about Langlois and
no.
Agnes.
No,
we're trying to do a business here, and we can't because our list. You know, they're impeding our area over there.
Well, I mean, it impacts both basins. It's just not okay.
ASAP.
So I guess you'll schedule, work on the schedule as quick as you can.
I kind of want to see if the board is like Thursday, Fridays are good in the afternoons on every week, or is that just
pick a Thursday that the wind's been blowing all day.
Right. Look at the wind chart.
Are you going to have it here?
Oh, it's going to be here.
I think all right. You can do, Gary, is get a hold of the county commission and see what they can. Where they can fit in, and we'll just have to try and make it work.
So Thursdays, I'll pick a Thursday, like in the afternoon,
sure.
2 o'clock.
Yeah.
So it could be the
4th, the 11th, or the 18th.
Yeah.
Would give us enough time to get it to the paper. And, yeah.
Well, just for what it's worth, San Francisco ends on the
19th. Go with that.
And the 18th would work perfect for me, but it's up to you guys. Tom's leaving on the 28th and be back around the 18th or 20th
of August.
I can always come in and see you guys after you guys have the meeting.
Can you call in? Can you call in?
I can call in. So, yeah, I can call in. So, no problem. I've done it before, Mr. Sturgis, so. Just make sure we're not partying.
Right. 2 o'clock.
We do it at 8 a.m.
Don't party by this.
2 o'clock. It's a second more, so.
Okay. Further on that?
So, the afternoon will be okay with you guys?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. That brings us to information item B, the dog leash law enforcement.
Full disclosure, June McGraw that sent this letter is my wife. I was not there on that day, but I am down here a lot. I'm kind of curious what the port has done in the past to control dogs. I mean, I think for every four people down there, there's a dog or two for every three or four people. So there's a lot of dogs down there, and I'm not talking about pooping and peeing. Seen a lot of aggressive dogs. I've not seen anybody get torn up, but I think it's an issue. So I'm just kind of curious what the port has done in the past. And my wife's conversations with the county animal controls, he said he, his words, not mine, that he has contacted, been contacted by people before, and then and he has then contacted the port, and the port has not been receptive to him coming down here and doing animal control issues with dogs. His words.
When?
I don't know when that was. Those are his words.
My guess is the port has not been receptive to being the enforcement arm.
Right.
Which I don't think they should be. Well, I don't think we have any issue with the county showing up and doing whatever it is they're going to do.
Right. And I, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Either he, I don't know how truthful he is. He may be trying to get away. You know, he's too busy. I don't know. But I think it would be advantageous for staff to reach out and say, hey, can you come down here and do a sweep?
I would be happy to take that call.
I don't know. Just an idea.
How about signage? We don't, do we have signage up for dog dogs?
So we...
There's one somewhere.
There's, I think, currently total throughout the port, there is eight. Is that what we decided? That there was a total that is throughout every place in the port. We just ordered 20 more signs. Mm-hmm. I have the guys out putting posts, marking it everywhere possible. That are in the walking areas. There's six in particular that are going just on the kite field with brand new dog waste bags. Mm-hmm.
So what is the actual rule?
The court orders to say that the dogs need to be on a leash.
But
that's
not
the court order.
On port property.
On port property.
That includes on the kite field.
That's port property, yeah.
So the people that go down there and throw their balls for their Labradors aren't supposed to do that.
Nope. And there are designated dog parks in the harbor and in Brookings, and then they're fenced and everything.
But, and you know, we can tell them, we can tell individuals to put their dogs on a leash.
I mean, I know the port doesn't want to be enforcement, but who does? I mean, if we don't.
The Perry County Sheriff's Department, who enforces our ordinance.
And that's who we went to first, and they referred us to animal control. Sheriff doesn't want a part of it either.
And that's where, you know, that becomes that our enforcement and what we have is dictated by their interpretation of what happened, interpretation of if you have control over your dog. It kind of keeps going and going and going. I had this conversation with one of the deputies too, and I said, you know, if the port ordinance says dogs on a leash, that means every single dog, right? Every single dog. So that will include your sheriff canine dogs. That will include your anybody that says your service animal. You know, I don't have to have a leash. That just includes everybody. So typically when with something like that, I don't have my guys going around trying to determine or dictate if they need to put their dog on a leash or not, because if they get the reaction that a lot of local people that I hear get the reaction mm-hmm. from people when they say, put your dog on a leash, we now kind of have a standoff if we're just going to walk away from the situation or if we're going to go down the avenue of trespassing them, calling in sheriffs, and making, you know, how big of a deal are we going to make of it? Just currently with everything we have going on, it's to try and let the sheriff and the public, if they run into problems, they call the sheriff, and it's handled that way.
Does the port track animal issues?
They're tracked under issues. If they're reported, we log every incident that comes our way, whether it be dog, person, anything.
In reality,
those ordinances or one of those that's an umbrella. If somebody is attacked and injured by an off-leash dog, then the law says you can't do that, which fixes the liability. But I think an aggressive program to prevent it is probably not very realistic. But we can put up signs, we can do what we need to do to make sure everybody's aware of it.
The port tried to do that when I first came here, and it didn't go well with the port. We got a lot of blowback from the people that have control of their dogs. They wanted special permits. They wanted to do all the things. So it kind of went in the wayside of the port trying to police it to what it is now. So it kind of goes in cycles. There is a lot of problems on the beach. The port does not control the beach. It's not port property. So there is a lot of dog instances happening out there that somehow we get involved with that, but we don't get involved with it. But we get accused of not enforcing things on the beach, like the fireworks. Fireworks is the same example. There's supposed to be no fireworks at all at the port. We put up signs. We know what happens every year.
Well, those of us that work with fireworks were told by the authority in this county to... Don't even go down there, nothing.
They don't have enough people to even start shaking a stick at them. It's the same thing. I mean, once you get down there, now you're in a huge confrontation with hundreds of people.
With more fireworks than the actual display.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, these are information items, so we'll move on. Call 3 left behind on the jetty from the fireworks.
Yeah, I submitted that, and I found out this week that later on the 5th, I was down there on the 5th early in the morning walking the dog, and it was just a pit. And I found out that later in that day, they came down and cleaned it all up.
Yeah.
Generally, I think Henry organizes the cleanest of the week.
Henry went down there.
I know our church even was doing the beach, not the jet.
Because yeah, I know I walked it last year, and on the day of the 5th, there were 40 people out there picking up.
They were probably asleep. That was my concern, because it was everywhere. And I thought, well, it's either going in the river or it's going in the ocean, and I know it's technically really not the port's deal, but so I was wondering who. It was John Henry's deal to get it cleaned up.
Mm-hmm. Boat ramp and boat parking area.
I guess I'm just complaining today. So anyway, I know people launch their boats. Commissioners launch their boats. I fish at least one day a week. I launch and retrieve my boat every week. And it's in the winter, it's okay. In the summer, it's bad. Summer weekends, it's real bad. Summer holidays, it's unbearable. I don't even usually go on a holiday, but I was coerced into going on a holiday this summer. I'm just wondering, are we happy? I mean, we've had many, 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 many discussions about signage and traffic and everything that goes on down there, but it is not going away. It is not getting better. There are more people coming here, and as we improve the port and make it nicer and prettier, it's going to get worse. I mean, I actually went in one day and talked to Gary. There was a guy parking the launch ramp next to Zola's, the closest one. I know most people don't use it unless you have to, but he was literally blocking it, sitting there watching people load and unload his boats, and I saw him as I came in. I went in, got the truck, came back, picked up the boat, pulled back up there and let the guys clean up the boat, and I went over and talked to him. So I've been sitting here for a couple hours just watching people. I said, do you realize you're blocking a whole launch ramp? Well, no one seemed to want to use it. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that goes on down there, and I'm just wondering if we're happy with the way things are.
I don't think anybody's happy with it, but I don't know what else we've had this discussion.
I know, over and over and over.
Time again, we put up every kind of sign you can imagine. We've had people walking through writing tickets and sticking orange notes on the windshields, and you're just dealing with a society that doesn't have much concern and consideration for other people, or people who are just totally clueless. I'm not sure where to put it, but it's somewhere.
More on the last.
Sandwich boards, they've actually put...
Can you make a comment?
Certainly.
For First of all, the Oregon State Marine Board did a great job and a great grant getting that facility there. And as a rule, it works pretty well. I appreciate the port putting that boat-ready paint on that one area because they park there. You got two issues that are a real problem down there, and you've got the occasional tourist that's going to be in the way, but you've got excessive parking down there from Zola's Pizza and from Irish Post. And I know they put signs up, they got some boards up, but that one boardwalk area, or that one little area right in front between where they park and across the street to Zola's, that there's probably 10 to 20 cars there every single afternoon and evening. And none of them have, I mean, I pay to use that ramp, and everybody that does pays to use that ramp. And I think we're going to get in violation with the Marine Board if we're not going to be able to provide that service. I mean, that grant is something that I don't know if they can take it away or they can come back and do something different with it, but there's got to be something more that they can do. I've seen those red little stickers that they put, and they're all over the parking lot. So not only do they take them, they throw them, they litter with them. But I'm not sure what it's going to take to do that unless you just put signs up there and have – there has to be some consequence for parking there. And if there's no consequence, people are going to park there. I talked to one guy. He was parked in the boat-ready area before it was painted. And I said, excuse me, but you're parked in the boat-ready. I had my boat on, and I didn't need to use it at that time. He goes, well, there's no sign here. I go, well, there's a sign right there. He goes, so? And he continued to walk right into the pizza park. So people don't have any consideration for that. And if there are going to be spaces, there are lots of times there's cars parked there that you can't get your boat trailer in. I talk to people that have trouble getting their boat trailers in and out. When people are parked there, they double park there. So there needs to come up with something. And I don't know if it's something the port can enforce, or there has to be some consequence for parking there, or people are going to continue to do it.
Well, this is about round 9 of this discussion that we've had going back for a long time, and it had to do with the State Marine Board, because there have been a number of complaints made to the State Marine Board about that very issue. So we have been in contact with them and discussion with them for...
I don't imagine they're too happy about it.
They're not, and so they have given us a whole series of recommendations, and we followed every single one. That's why there are signs everywhere. But the reality of that is, short of having somebody hired to stand down there every day and say, you can't park here, I don't know how we'd resolve this.
So well, they work, when you put the board signs up there, that had no parking, restaurant parking. But they've got one facing the city water plant up there, and there's nobody that parks over there. They need to be along that little area there, right where everybody parks to walk right into the restaurant.
And they are
and there. Over the other side where they park, and they walk across the other street. So whether they're going to read them and acknowledge them, I don't know.
But
I don't know if they can. Somebody's got to be able to have
some. Same issue as dogs. I mean, I parked my boat this morning right in front of a sign that says boat trailer parking only, right there. And, you know, I don't know how you can make any of this any clearer to anybody, but other than having somebody stand there and go over and say, are you fishing with somebody on a boat, or do you have a boat trailer? If not, you can't park here. But
is there an entity that can cite those people?
Well, it's involved. We'd have to call the sheriff's office, I guess, and have them trespass, right?
That's what the port had the ability to do, yes, would be trespass the individual.
But if we used to put that, boot on, I think the word would get around.
The boot is asking, the boot's dangerous for employees to be going and putting on cars. That's, people don't like the boot.
No. I
can attest to that with the booter.
That's a very contentious, and when that person comes and finds out that you're putting a boot on his truck, it's not it.
And that, I mean, the threat of towing people is certainly real, and we can't tow them, but the realities of going down, seizing somebody's personal property, having to impound it over a
certainly a relatively minor violation that's going to get us in a lot of trouble. I mean, that's the reality of all this, is it's difficult for us to control it. We've done what we can do. I park down there too, and I can tell you, if you want to have the worst weekend of this entire year, go to the Pirates Festival down there on that weekend.
Yeah.
And I promise you, I don't care where you go.
Well, Zola's is a leasee. There could be something that they could do with Zola's. They've got a lease coming up. Make something that...
We have talked to Zola's at length.
We've talked about them. We cannot ask our small businesses to direct traffic.
For them to
come into it. And I know it kind of sounds like we're hitting back with every single thing you say. It's just we have exhausted a lot of effort. We talked to Oregon State Marine Board. I got an email behind Kate a mile long with them over the complaints that come in, what her suggestions are, what we do to keep fixing them. I do not think we're in any jeopardy of losing that launch ramp or having to pay back any grants. Everything they've asked for us, we've complied with. There is the problem with a lot of places that you get fighting the general public. And if Oregon State Marine Board were to say, tow them away, I would tow them away, but I would make sure they knew exactly who asked us to do it. We're trying not to cause too many waves for a parking issue, is what.
Well, maybe put two or three of those sandwich boards right in that area, right in front of the majority of those people park, right in that rock deal. You know, that might help. I don't know. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah, well, we've had, you know, we go to an annual conference every year with other ports, and we talk to them, and they're all going, oh, yeah. Sure, we can't enforce parking either. I mean, it's just
kind of like the lease law. It's a law, but nobody.
Well, it's a law, but when you get into the hierarchy of the way law enforcement works right now, coming down to enforce lease laws or parking tickets isn't going to be very high on anybody's list, you know. And we can't get them to respond to property crimes, let alone anything else. It's just a matter of what the way we're living these days, I guess. Okay. Anything else?
I don't know. We have three young men here. We're busy.
So, okay. Did you guys come say anything?
I just talked to you.
Uh-oh.
Oh. Okay. We've been patiently waiting for a
minute. Get the cops out.
Okay. Any commissioner's comments?
I quit being there by now.
All right. With that, we will adjourn.
Goodbye.